All right, we're live. See, we still have some people coming in. That's okay. My name is Mats Christensen. I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team. We build ASP.NET, but we also build Visual Studio, all the cool stuff that you use every day to build your websites, HTML, CSS, MVC tooling, all that good stuff. What I'm going to show you today, I just want to get rid of some confusion there's been. I gave a talk Tuesday about what's new in Visual Studio for web developers. How many here saw that talk? Hands up. A good number of you. All right. So this will be pretty much new content. There will not be a lot of overlap, just to make that clear. This is not kind of the same session. It is new content. Also, for the rest of you that didn't see my talk Tuesday, the build I have of Visual Studio is very new. It comes from our development branch. It's 1 week old, so it's like very close to the RTM. However, it comes from the ASP.NET development branch, so we don't have all the new UI, so it doesn't actually look like RC. It looks more like the beta, and it actually says beta. But just so you know, it is actually much closer to RTM, so you just have to trust me on that. Okay, so we're going to talk about HTML5 and ASP.NET 4 and 4.5. And I'm going to show you a lot of new cool stuff that we build into the framework and also build into the tooling. How many people here have already played around with HTML5? A lot of you? That's cool. So it's a bit of a loaded term, HTML5. It basically is used for describing anything that's modern on a web application, right? But what it really is just a new web standard. There's nothing really that fancy about it. But if you remember some years ago, it was a little bit sucky writing web applications, like after the browser wars. So HTML5 kind of gives us a promise that we no longer have to fight with all the browsers. You remember just having a box that you wanted to float to the right side of the page? You had to kind of implement that for every browser. You couldn't just think that that was the same in all the browsers. But HTML5 gives us the promise that we can actually do that now. Just write it once and run it everywhere. Of course, that's not the entire story, right? Because browsers have to keep up. And we really have to thank especially the mobile browsers, Apple iPhone and also Google Chrome, for kind of pushing and bringing HTML5 out to everyone and kind of driving all the rest of the browser vendors to step up their game. You're not supposed to read this. This is basically just to tell you that HTML5 is so huge. JavaScript APIs, all the angle brackets, the markup itself, and CSS3, there's no way I can cover all that in an hour. So hopefully I'll get to like 20%, but even that I'm not sure of. But what I will do is that I will give you a very, very good starting point to start implementing some of these features on top of your existing ASP.NET websites. And then you can go home and kind of read up on the rest. But the starting point should be pretty good here. All right. So this is what we can get from HTML5. So simpler, smaller, and semantic basically means we get a much more maintainable code base, much more portable, and we can write it much faster. We simply write less code to get more functionality, and we can maintain it easily. Here's an example of that. So this is rounded corners. Right? We've all been fighting with rounded corners making it work in IE6. And on the left side, that's what it looked like. A lot of CSS, a lot of some background images, and a lot of stuff. And on the right, we have 8 lines of code that is basically just doing a border radius in CSS3, end of story, sort of. We'll get back to that. But of course, a lot simpler, a lot more maintainable. Here's another one. A placeholder. So in a form field, like an input text box, you might want to have some text to kind of guide the user what they should type in that text box. But when they click the text box, you want that text to disappear. That's called a placeholder. And on the left side, we see how we do it in JavaScript using jQuery. There's 5 code paths in there. It's not that simple. Whereas to the right, we just put a placeholder attribute on the input element. Simple, clean, and semantic. Here's a very, very common one. There might not be anything inherently wrong with this, but when you consider the div class header and the div ID nav up there, they're both divs. I can't just look at it and immediately see what it is and where it's used. That's kind of a little bit of a problem. Then we go further down. We have div class page body. This is very common that you use. This probably lives somewhere in the master page, right? So it's not very portable. If this is a common code structure that I have, I can't put it in a user controller or partial and copy it around and using different places, because that whole class page body kind of just assumes that there is only one and it's on the master page or the layout page. Inside of it, we have our post class here, the div. So this might be a block, right? So here's where my block content goes. And it ends up with having an add. Now, the add is not relevant at all. It's not related to the actual blog post here. I just put it there because then, you know, the design of my page, it looks like the way I want it to. But it's not really related. But there's no way for me to know that when I just look at the code. And then finally, at the bottom, we have a div ID footer. So what we can do now is that we can use some of the new HTML5 elements. We can use the header and the nav at the top here, which is really, really good at being very specific about what it does. Right? The nav element makes it very, very specific that we're now dealing with navigation. The header element is also very interesting because I can have more than one header element on a site. I can have a header element inside a div or inside a section or something like that. I can have multiple. So that makes it portable, right? Then we go down to the center here. I've replaced the div page body with a section because that's kind of what it is. It's a natural section of the page. And inside of it, I replaced one of the divs with an article. It's a blog post. It's an article. It makes sense. I can see what the meaning of this is, the semantics. And then finally, I take my ads and I put them in what's called an aside. Right? That solves my whole separation thing. I know now that it's not related to the content. It's not related to the section that it's actually in. I can tell just by looking at the code. So that's actually a perfect use for the aside. And then at the end, we have a footer. So now, very clean, very maintainable, and very to the point. All right. That's it for slides. Let's look at some ASP.NET. So I will go over some web form stuff. I will go over some MVC, but a lot of it will be shared between the two. So let's just take an existing website. Let me run this. So what I have here is it's a podcast website. And it has all my episodes and some details about them. And then it has this blue box right here, which is my latest episode. I want to feature in a blue box so it makes it easy for people to see. And if I want to HTMLify this website, I want to start right here. So we have the doc type. This is HTML 4.01 strict. And it doesn't really help me anything. It's a long string, a URL, and some text. I don't know really what it means. But the only reason why I have it there is to force the browsers to render my page using standards mode. That's the only reason you have for using the doc type. And I can just delete that. So I just deleted the DTD is what it's called. And now it's HTML5. Right? If you don't specify anything, browsers assume it's HTML5. So that's kind of cool. And then, see here I have a div ID header. So let's change that to a header element. and footer to a footer. Okay, and let's go to the index page. So here I have this div class featured. That's my blue box that you saw before. So it was actually a section. When you kind of think about it logically, it was distinct from the section above it and the section below it. The section above it was some headers, and the section below it was some other content. So let me change the div to a section. And also, we have these two headers, H1 and H2. We now have a way of grouping them because they belong together, but we did not have a way of grouping headers before. So let's do that with something called the H group. You see here how I get IntelliSense for all this. Visual Studio is fully HTML5 aware and capable. Let me just format the document. For those of you, just like me, that never touches the format document in HTML because it sucks, it no longer sucks. It's actually really, really good. So finally, we got that fixed in 2012. Anyway, this H group actually does not change the layout of my site. Some of these tags does not do anything except they add semantic meaning to the site for maintainability reasons and for styling and JavaScript, those sort of reasons. So now, let's try to run this again. Yikes. Exit this guy. Run this. And it all looks exactly the same, so that's fine. I'm running IE9 because I'm on Windows 7 here. So let me hit F12 to open the developer tools. And let's switch to IE7. Yikes. So this does not look good, right? So why does it not look good in IE7? Let's take a look. So something weird is going on here. Look at the header. So that was the header I added before. It's now a self-closing empty DOM node. And these two divs I have right here were supposed to be inside that header, but are not. And then, I don't even know what this is, /header/, it's just weird. And the footer here, same problem. So obviously, yikes, obviously IE has a bit of a problem here. So how do we fix it? Well, that's actually very, very easy. So what we do, when you go in and do a file new project, we load a lot of NuGet packages. That's a new thing we do in 2012. And one of those packages that you get automatically when you do file new project, it doesn't matter if it's MVC or web forms, you get a library called Modernizer. So it's right here. It's written by some really clever guys, I think some of them from Google and from Chrome. And it's what we call a polyfill. It fills in the gaps in the browsers. It adds some features to older browsers that perhaps maybe they should have been supporting. So that's actually making it really easy. So let me just include that script. I'm going to do it here at the top. So that was Modernizer 253, like this. Well, now we go back and hit F5. And that was a big error here. Let's try again. Sorry, what? Oh, thank you. Perfect. So this was IE9, and now we try IE7, and we see it looks the same. So Modernizer is really, really awesome because it fixes those small problems. So this looks good in IE7 and IE6 and so on. And just to let you know what's going on here, so IE7 has this, and IE8 actually, has this problem that when they see elements on the page that it does not natively support, elements like header, footer, section, and all those HTML5 elements, when it sees it on a page, it doesn't say, hey, there's an unknown element. Let me just render that as a block element. No, no, no. Instead, it says, hey, there's an unknown element, and then it just moves on. It doesn't know what to do with it. And then it turns out that there is a hack, I think it's a hack, workaround hack, that Modernizer uses that says, if you do in JavaScript document.createElement and pass it a header and a footer and a section, all those new elements, then now what happens is that when you render the page, IE7, for instance, says, hey, I have heard about this header element, so now I'm going to render it. So it's kind of weird. You have to add some styles to take all those new elements and say display block. I've already done that, and that's why it looks exactly the same. All right. Well, it is a podcast. So I think we should add some audio. And we have a nice new HTML5 snippets ready to go here. And I do have an audio file right here. So let me just fill in audio episode. Go. And you can see that we automatically do both MP3 and AUG. And this is because that there's still some discussion amongst the browsers in what file formats they should support. Now, MP3 is supported by most of them, so it's relatively safe to use. But you might want to be in a situation where you say, hey, I have some premium content that I want to serve in an AUG file. And if the browser does not support AUG, I'm going to fall back to MP3. So the reverse of what you see here. And when the browser sees this, it sees the first source element. It says, hey, that's MP3. I understand that. And then it just stops. It does not look at the next sources. If it did not understand MP3, it would try the next source and the next and the next. It's exactly the same as the video tag. But I only have MP3, so I'm just going to delete this. Let's see, 99. And we now have this nice audio control here, right? With no sound right now. That's okay. But if we look at that in IE7, nothing is rendered. So even though that it knows what the audio tag is and it puts it in the DOM correctly, it cannot render this native audio player control. So what I want to do instead is just say, sorry, your browser doesn't understand audio playback in HTML5. We go back, hit refresh, and now we have that text written right here. So you see the whole fallback mechanism from one source to the next can be anything. It doesn't have to be source elements. It could be whatever. It could also be Flash or Silverlight or text in this case. There is actually a really, really good library out there called MediaElements.js by a guy called John Dyer. It's really popular. And it will automatically add Flash and Silverlight for you if you need to. But I kind of like this. I just want to keep my text right here. And it's really good for search engine optimization, maybe. And I kind of like to have it around for like screen readers. But when people just come in using a browser that doesn't support it, I just want to hide that text. So let me write some JavaScript here. So we write a jQuery page load event handler here. Go. So this function is called whenever the page is loaded. And I'm going to use Modernizer again. So I'm going to say, if not Modernizer, audio. We can ask Modernizer for features that the browser supports. And you see there's a lot of Boolean things we can ask for here. I'm just going to use the audio one. So the current browser that sees your page, Modernizer will tell you exactly what it supports, which is kind of nice. So let's just say if Modernizer tells us that the browser does not support audio, let's find all the audio elements and do hide. You see here how I get IntelliSense in JavaScript? This is jQuery. It just feels natural and correct. So there's a lot of new IntelliSense work done here in the editor, a new JavaScript editor. I'm just going to do this. Let's go back. I hit F5, and now that text is gone. Very, very easy. Let's do IE9, and we have it back. So what we did here was a mix of two concepts, progressive enhancement and graceful degradation. So progressive enhancement basically means that you have a very solid, broadly supported base functionality website, and then you start adding rich features on top of it using HTML. Graceful degradation is kind of the reverse. It's when you have the full website with a lot of advanced stuff that might not be supported in lower browsers. It degrades gracefully to some usable state when you visit it with an old browser. So what we saw here was kind of a little bit of both of that. Okay. Let's switch gears here. I'm going to do a little bit of web forms. Same techniques, though, will apply to MVC. So here, I have a website. And I've kept it really, really simple for the demo purposes. You see here how I opened this one in Firefox. So in Visual Studio 2012, I can choose from all the browsers I have installed. If you install phone emulators or iPad emulators, you can add them to this list as well. You can even select multiple browsers. So every time you hit F5, it will open multiple browsers at the same time. So I'm going to stick with Firefox here. And my site is very simple. It allows a user to upload files. Specifically, I want them to upload pictures. So this is probably good for like a user control to have this element. And here's how it works. You click a file. I can only click one, right? So click one here. And that's all the functionality right now. So it's kind of annoying that I can only select one file. And that is the way that it has always been. You can only select one file. So you go to sites sometimes, and you see like you have multiple of these input type files, these browse buttons. Or you use Flash or Silverlight to kind of allow for you to select more than one file at a time. Now, in HTML5, we can do something different. And we've updated some of the controls that is in the core of ASP.NET. For instance, the file upload control. We can now say allow multiple equal true. And what that allows us to do is I can now do this. Select as many as I want. And it looks like this. Here we go. If you add this attribute to your input type file, then it tells the browsers that you can upload more than one file. The browsers do not do that automatically. You have to add this attribute for a very good reason, because your server code might not be ready to handle more than one file. You might get an error, a really nasty error. So we've done some work to kind of mitigate that and make it really awesome, actually. So let's add an onclick event handler to my button here so we can react to it. I hit equals, and now in 2012, all server-side events, I can generate my event handler like this. Not just onclick, but all server-side events on all server-side controls. So let me just do that. And what happened is that in the background, we opened up the code behind. I'm just going to hit F7 to get to my code behind. And here you see the event handler is created for me. So let's code against my upload control, the file upload control. I can say if the upload has files, you see the plural, the extra S there. What we've taken is the exact same file upload control and added some new features to it so it can handle the new HTML5 formats. So now it has files. It means multiple files. Your existing code will still run. You don't have to use these new ones, these new properties, but you can. So let's just say if the upload has files, then you know, for each file in upload posted, here it is again, posted file or posted files, right? This is an array. And then we're just going to do something really fancy here. And let's give it a, here we go. Let's run this guy. So now I want to just response write the file name that I've just uploaded. It works like this. I select multiple, hit the open, click upload, and here we go. Very, very simple stuff. So this is my base functionality. I allow people to upload multiple files. If they have a browser, IE9 and below, even though I have that attribute set multiple equals multiple, it will still only support one. The cool thing is that new plural of hash files and posted files still works if you only have one file. So you just update your code to use the new thing, and everything works as you would expect. What I want to do, though, is I think it would be kind of cool if I could give my users some information before they hit the upload button. It would be really cool if they could see what files they selected, because you see here what happens. I select like five files, and this text box is so small they can't really tell which one they selected. So I just want to write out the file names and the file sizes as well before they hit upload. And for that, I will use a new element in HTML5 called output. It doesn't really do anything. It's like an empty container tag, but it's very semantically accurate, right? You see this, you think, oh, you're going to print some output there. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. And let me just add a couple of scripts here. jQuery and then some other script. Okay. So I've cheated and written a little bit of JavaScript. So what we're doing here is that we have a file called, or a function called handleFileSelect. And we're going to call that from this line down here, line 14. So I could use Modernizer and ask Modernizer if the browser supported the new file API. You can also do it like I do it here. I ask if the file object exists on the window object. Modernizer is a little bit cooler. I just wanted to show you kind of what you can do under the hood, what Modernizer does under the hood. And then when the upload element, the input type file, whenever I've selected anything, when the change event occurs, then run this delegate function here. And I'm just going to hit F12. To go to definition, and we jump up here. And this is very simple. So I'm getting the output element. I'm clearing it for content by setting the HTML to an empty string. Then I'm going to loop through all the files that I just selected, and I'm going to append some HTML to my output element. Okay. Let's see if it works. I'm going to select four files. And here we go. So I can now see what's going on. This is kind of strange because you would think this is a big security risk, right? From JavaScript, I'm reading the user's hard drive. And this, of course, was something that was closed like in IE5. I remember doing it in VBScript back in the day. But no, it's actually perfectly safe. You can only access what the user has let you access, in this case, these couple of files. But we can do actually more, because I look at this now and realize that it would actually be cooler if I just showed the actual images before the user uploaded them. So let's do that. And for that, I'll use the file reader API. So let's write some of that. So you get full IntelliSense for file reader. So a file reader is what actually I can use to read the bytes, everything about that file, I can read from JavaScript. And when I load a file into the file reader, I want to handle the onload event here. And so I'm just going to assign it a function. There we go. And then what I want to do in here is that I want to do output, and then I want to append some stuff. In this case, I want to do an image. So we do event.target.result IntelliSense all the way. And then let's just close the image right here. And then the only thing I need to do is to load the actual file into the file reader. So we say reader.read as data URL, and then I'm going to pass it the file. So the file is up from my for loop here. So I'm just going to do this. Let's try to run that again. So here we go. Just for the fun of it, let's do a hard refresh. So this is the network traffic. You see it loads my page and my CSS and a couple of script files. Well, let's try to do this again. Select four images. No network traffic at all. The server has not done anything at all to show these images. It all happens in the browser. So what's really, really nice about this little trick is that if your browser supports the file reader and the file API, you can give them this experience. You can do progress bars. You can load the images onto canvas elements and draw, let them draw on it, and then you can save that. And I'm just going to hit the upload button here. Now we hit the server, and now I did the response right. So my server functionality is exactly the same. Yet for newer browsers, I was able to give them this very, very cool experience where I loaded the images directly. And so this is actually a very good example of progressive enhancement, where the base functionality remains the same, and we build on top of it. Let me just show you what these data URIs are. So these images, if we inspect them here, this is a data URI. This is supported in, this is a format where it actually takes your byte array off the file itself and Base64 encodes it and create what is called a data URI. It's a standard. It works in IE8 and above. You can use it in CSS, in HTML, everywhere. And you can see Firefox will actually see that this is just an image and displayed right here. So that's how that works. But I could also just access the actual byte array and change individual bytes and rewrite stuff all in JavaScript. So it's pretty powerful. Okay. Let's create a new site. I know it says beta, but it's not. Let's create a new web forms app. It doesn't really matter. Any questions to the file reader thing while this loads, by the way? No? Okay. So what's going on right here, as you can see in the bottom, it loads a lot of NuGet packages. Because what we've been doing is that we've actually, if we look at the package file here, you can see how many NuGet packages we actually ship out of the box. So what this allows us to do is that modernize with jQuery all those things that you kind of need to use if you want to do easy programming of HTML5. It's NuGet packages, so it updates out of band. You don't have to wait 3 years to a new version of Visual Studio to get all the goodness. Here's so a lot of good stuff here. Let's just run this and see what it looks like. So all the templates that you get out of the box, they all look the same. If it's web forms or MVC or web pages, they're all the same layout. All looks like this. And I think they look pretty cool, actually, compared to the old ones. But you might think, okay, it's a template. Who cares? I'm going to delete it anyway and write my own stuff, right? So the goal we've had with these new templates is to make it really, really easy for you guys to just take what we give you in the templates and modify them, because it comes with some pretty cool functionality. If we open up here, we can see we actually use like header, section, nav. We use all the HTML5 stuff, but we do something else that's really cool. We use something that's called responsive design. How many people here have heard about that, responsive design? Okay, like a handful or two of you. So let me just open the Opera Mobile emulator here. Take the URL with me. So you see here what we're doing. We're actually, come on, we're actually kind of changing the way the page looks if you're using a mobile device. And it actually looks really good. You see, the logo is all centered. The menu is all centered. We don't have these images. They don't appear on the mobile device anymore. So it really, really scales down very nicely. And I mean, you can do that yourself by doing this. And there we go. All right, so we figure out, oh, this is a good size for when you are a mobile device. And we change some stuff. So you see, you get a very, very nice, very, very clean and useful template here. And it's all structured very simple, very small, and very semantic. So you just keep this, and you change the CSS, you change some JavaScript, and you can add your new controller actions and new views and new web form pages to the same master page, for instance. And you get all this goodness for free. The way we did that, let me open the master page. So one of the things we did was we added the viewport. Of course, you get full IntelliSense for a viewport. Again, the HTML5 editor actually understands all of HTML5. So you get that thing in there. But here's the thing. So the viewport actually says, kind of adjust to the size of the device screen that you're on, the resolution. So it gives a kind of a nice fluidity. But what makes it snap so that all the headers, the logo and the menu kind of snap to center is something called CSS3 media queries. So we hide that in here in the CSS file. So here's how that works. So this is CSS3, right? This is IE9 and above, and all other browsers, including mobile phones, support this. And basically what I'm saying is that if your screen is under or below 850 pixels, then all this stuff that's inside the media query should be run, right? It gets activated. And it overrides some of the styles and changes the behavior. So that's really nice. And we did some other stuff in CSS as well while I'm here. So we have a color picker. How many people here have seen the color picker? A good number. All right. It's my favorite feature, for sure, in the CSS editor. So it makes things a lot easier. We do support some of the new CSS3 things that you kind of need to do sometimes. And in the color picker, that could be transparent colors. So I can now drag the opacity slider here. And you can kind of see what's going on. Snaps back to hex, because that's what I used. If I used a named color or HSL or some other format, it would snap back to that. We did a lot of other things in the CSS editor, and not to repeat myself from Tuesday, you guys that did not go to my Tuesday talk, you should check it out on Channel 9 next week when it goes live. I want to show some other things that I did not show Tuesday. And I'll just very quickly mention that the CSS editor is brand new. We could not support CSS3, all the new constructs, in the old editor. It simply just didn't support it. So we threw away everything, and we started from scratch. And you can see you get like what you're used to from C#. You get the outlining and even comments. You've never been able to do this before. Control-KC, Control-KU. You know, small stuff like this. And we also added regions. So this is kind of a common scenario, right? You structure your CSS by adding like a big comment. It would be kind of nice if I could just select like this, Control-KS to say surround with, and I'm just going to say region. All right. There we go. And I can now collapse it. So I can add some structure. This is particularly useful in CSS. I know that a lot of people hate regions. A lot of people love them. Yes, we have one down here that hates regions. In CSS, it kind of makes sense because we do these big comments to logically separate the sections. So it's something I find useful. All right. So let's go to here and add a new web form. So I'm going to add a new item. Go. So get rid of this. So we had this issue that some of the new HTML5 features were actually not supported and did not work with ASP.NET. It's not like there was a workaround or anything. It literally just did not work. And so we fixed that. And this is the one. The file upload was one of them. This is the other one. It's a text box. So let's create one. So the problem was, if I wanted to use some of the new HTML5 input types, it simply ignored it. It would not use it before. So now I can set the input type here, text mode equals. And you can see that we now have like all the different ones. Instead of just multi-line password and text, we now have color, date, email, URL, and so on. So that's kind of nice. So let's run this guy. Okay. This is a feature. There we go. Exactly. So what we're doing here, let me do F12 to bring up the developer tools. So let's take a look at what this does. So it adds type equals date time. All right, so a lot of you have probably seen this before. Let me just mention a few things. This was completely impossible to do before in the core ASP.NET in web forms. We still have the problem that browsers really don't support this yet. IE10 actually has really good support for some of these elements, but date time, only Opera has support for it. The cool thing is that browsers that do not support stuff like date time, they will just treat it as a text box, as you see. Right? It's just a text box, nothing special is going on. So let's see here what Opera says. Look at this. We actually get a full rendered calendar control here. That's very nice. Let's do another one of these. Color. Let's go back. And now we have full color picker right here. So it just uses the system color picker, which is kind of nice. But this is Opera. Opera is like ridiculously awesome in input types. So I want to show what that could look like in MVC. So let me just run this MVC app right here. This is MVC 4. You see, it's just basically file new project. But I've added a few extra views. Create new. Here we go. So date of birth, right? If I click it here, we can see that, where do we have it? It is indeed of type date time. And MVC4 does this automatically. It's actually pretty cool. It looks at your models. And I have my model here, customer. You can see my date of birth is of date time. So MVC will automatically create the right HTML5 input types for this. But as I mentioned before, only Opera supports the native date picker. All right, so if I take this guy and go to Opera, it should look pretty good. Here we go, right? Let me select the date and the time. I could have said, instead of date time, I could have said date, and I would only be able to pick the date. But it's fine. Here, all right? So very, very cool. But how do you get that functionality to work cross-browser? There's different ways to do it. I have one down here. So what I'm doing is that I use a library called YepNope. YepNope is a very small little script loader. It's built by the same people who build the modernizer. Here it is, YepNope. And basically, it's conditional script loading because it runs a test to see whether or not it should include your script files. So in this case, I'm asking Modernizer that to return a Boolean. Do the browser support date time? That's the test. Nope, it does not. In that case, load this script. This is a razor, piece of razor right here, syntax. So you should load this script. When that loading is done, with jQuery, find all the input type date time elements and invoke the jQuery UI date picker widget. Okay. See what that looks like. Here we go. Full date time picker. And if we go back to Opera, do a refresh here, see, it still uses the built-in support. So this brings forward a kind of an important point here. Never, ever, ever check if browser is IE and version is below 10, do this. Instead, what you need to do is check for the individual feature, because 2 years from now, new browsers come out that with new capabilities, and your site doesn't work as you intended anymore. So always check for features, not for browsers. Use Modernizer to check for features like you saw right here. And if we take a look at all the NuGet packages, let's see here. Oh, I don't have that in here. All right. Because I'm using the wrong one. Here we go. So MVC is kind of interesting, because MVC itself is a NuGet package. That means that MVC, as of version 4, has been deployed always. That's actually really cool. But what I want to show you is this guy, the web optimization stuff. How many people here have looked at the optimization in the new MVC? Only a couple of people. Okay. So you can imagine all this stuff that we add on top of our websites, a lot of JavaScript, a lot of CSS3, all this stuff, it kind of makes our page heavy to load because all these files have to be downloaded to the browser. That's a little bit problematic. So let me just open this guy in Firefox. When I think about it, you should use IE. Oh, I did it again. So what we want to do is that we want to make sure that we have as few requests as possible, because we end up with a lot of JavaScript all of a sudden and CSS. So here's what it looks like. Here are the network and start capturing. So you see here that we have 25 items are downloaded. Script files, images, CSS files, and the page itself. It's 25 total files. And that's because we have all this jQuery UI, jQuery Modernizer, all this good stuff that you probably will need. And then after that comes all your custom JavaScript, right? So it can get really, really huge very quickly. So what we've done is that we've added something called bundling and minification. It all lives in the new NuGet package called System Web Optimization. That's the namespace where it lives. And it basically does two things. It does bundling, which is where you take a lot of files and bundle into a single response. Right? It takes all your JavaScript files and make them into a single response. And then the other part it does is it does minification. So minification is the process where we remove all the white space from your JavaScript and CSS files, and we actually rewrite your code to make it even smaller. So it's pretty advanced. But here's how we do it. If we go take a look in the global ASACs, you can see we have this bundle config, and it registers bundles. So we've actually taken all this stuff out of global ASACs, and we've added it to the app start. App start is not like a special folder. right? It's just a folder with a name that looks special. But it's kind of nice for illustrating that this only run once. And here is my register bundles. So let's take a look at what it actually does. I'm going to create new script bundles, and I'm first going to give it a path. This is the relative path from the root of my website. So this is actually a route. You know routing from MVC and for web forms. It's been in web forms since version 4.0. So that's actually registering a route behind the scenes. So when the browser hits that URL, it should load all the scripts that was included in this script bundle. In this case, jQuery1.star, wildcard. This is kind of important because jQuery have the version number as part of the file name. So when you do update in the NuGet package to get the latest jQuery in there, your site just blows up and you spend an hour thinking, what just happened? And simply because they changed the version number and you forgot to go through all your pages where you have script references and update the number there. This is now handled automatically for you using this wildcard. So you no longer have to do that. Just update NuGet packages. It keeps on working. We continue here. We have you can have multiple files. Here we have a CSS file. It just has a single CSS file. So that means the whole bundling part of this is kind of irrelevant because bundling is taking multiple files and turning them into one. I only have one file, but I do this because I want the minification to happen. Okay? And then we have all the jQuery UI here. So here's how it works. I can now use the two new helper methods called styles and scripts and just pass in those paths, those URLs that I just created in my bundle config. So in this case, I want to bundle two different bundles into one. I want to render two different bundles, and then here just a single script file. So how to turn this on and off is very simple. Debug true and false. You can do it through app settings as well if you want to do more control over it, but by default, it's the compilation switch, debug true false. So let me just set this to false, and let's go back here. Let me start capturing. And you can see there's quite a big difference, right? We went from 25 requests down to 13. That actually means a lot, because not only did we speed up the page in which things are loaded from the server to the browser, but we also minified all the files, so they're smaller. They're a lot smaller, so you save a lot of bandwidth. And if you're like on a mountain or on a 2G network, this is really, really good stuff. Speeds up your site tremendously. And if we look at what actually happens, we can see here that we write out the bundle URL. We have one here, content CSS. That was one of my bundle paths. And then we give it a query string parameter. V equals, and then some goop here. This is actually the hash of the content itself, of the files. And this is what is called fingerprinting. So we're fingerprinting the URL with the snapshot of the file itself, the hash code. Why we do this is because now we can give our CSS and JavaScript really, really long expiration times in the browser. So we automatically says to the browser, hey, cache all my CSS and styles for a full year. If we did not add this hashing, we would have a problem every time we updated one of the script files or CSS files because the browser will not request them anymore. They would just use whatever they have in the cache. So this, what makes this really cool is that whenever you change your file, one of your files in any of your bundles, this hash code changes too. Then that generates a new URL, right? The URL changes if the hash code changes up here. And then the browser says, hey, I don't know what this URL is. I've never seen this before. And it downloads it. And then we say, cache it for a year. Right? So unless you do any changes, you get the maximum performance and cache ability out of using bundling and minification. And it comes out of the box. A question I always get about bundling and minification is, do we bundle every time the user requests our CSS? No, we cache everything. We cache everything server-side with a file dependencies on the individual files that you want to cache. So that's how it works. It's kind of clever. So that's how that works. So the thing that I'm kind of excited about in the whole HTML5, CSS3 space is that we've solved a big, big problem that we've always had in Visual Studio. In 2010, for instance, we had no support for CSS3. We had no support for HTML5 at all. We would simply just create error messages to you. It was useless. And we had no way to update it. We actually snug in a little bit of HTML5 in Service Pack 1, but in no way was it fully supported. It was just a little bit. So it's really, really nice that this time around, we kind of thought this over and thought, we can't just ship whatever is a snapshot of right now when we ship RTM and then not update anything until 2 to 3 years when the next version of Visual Studio comes out. Because that's exactly what happened for 2010. CSS3 and HTML5 all of a sudden became huge, but we just shipped. There was nothing we could do. So this time around, we are doing 3 to 4 months automatic updates of all web standard support in Visual Studio. So what that means specifically is in Visual Studio, one day you open it up, you will get a little toast notification down here saying, hey, there is an update. Do you want to update? And it just rolls in all the new CSS3 schema files and HTML and JavaScript. So we're always updating these things. Browsers move really fast, right? That's the big problem. That's the challenge. Firefox, they spit out a new version every 6 weeks. Chrome, almost the same rate. And we're actually monitoring them. We're actually working with Opera and all these browser vendors, and of course IE as well, so that we always know exactly what version of the browser supports what version of CSS3 and HTML and so on. And we roll all that stuff automatically out to any installation of Visual Studio, including the Express edition, the free one. We're going to do the same for WebMatrix, though it's going to be a little bit different, but it will be up to date equally as well. So I'm pretty excited about that. I want to end off here just by saying that please do contact me, because we're actually right now working very, very hard on that first update that's coming out, I don't know, 3-4 months after Visual Studio. If you find anything, if you have any ideas what you want us to add to the product, always just let me know. My website, mattschristensen.net, CodePlex, or Twitter. Because not only are we going to ship updates to web standards, we're also going to ship new features every 3 to 4 months. And for those features, I suggest that you go see my talk from Tuesday, where I actually demo a lot of them. But there's always room for more. So please send me a text or something, and we'll add some cool features. So we have a few minutes. Do we have any questions? Here's one. Mm-hmm. Yes, so the question is, if I use web forms and I use the script manager, how will I be able to utilize the bundling and minification? I have an example of that. Here we go. Under the hood, this is script manager. Under the hood, it does, in fact, even though it looks a little bit weird, it does use bundling and minification. So you get the exact same benefits, but you can choose to use the script manager to do it. You can also use what I showed you, the scripts.render. It's up to you. Yes. There will be a lot of info about this in the coming 2 to 3 months, very, very detailed. Because this looks weird, but it when you understand it, it's actually pretty nice. So, anyone else? No? All right, well, okay, we have one more. Yeah, so the question is there going to be a script manager for style sheets, basically? Yeah, so in MVC you have it, in web pages you have it. We're not going to have a script manager in web forms just like this. We don't have a style manager, per se, like that. You can definitely do it, but it's not going to look like this at all. So, yeah, for web forms right now, but we have a good solution for it in web page, in Razor, basically, everything Razor. Yeah. All right. Well, if no more questions, then thank you very much for showing up. It was good to see so many of you. Please remember to fill out your evals as well, including you guys from Tuesday. I haven't really received any evaluations, so thank you very much for that. Oh, it's accurate. Oh.